bad fight. Deep bad fight. Deep bad fight. Deep bad fight. Hey everybody, welcome to Deep Fat Fried. We're your hosts. I'm going Super Saiyan!
It didn't work.
That's Paul's exercise for the week.
More like Super Gayan.
Paul, you need a minute. We need to pause.
Can we start recording again? I need to fucking lay down and take a nap after that, man. I think I almost
Paul
went Super
used
Saiyan.
All of his show energy in one
all
foul
All of my
burst.
Life energy, I felt it drain into another source, and I got scared, and I pulled back at the last second. I think I was about to go Super Saiyan, guys.
Oh, were you, Paul?
But Paul, you know what?
Just because I was hyped to be here.
I hate to nitpick, dude, but usually they're drawing energy from the things around them. Not just from within themselves, so that's kind of strange.
Well, maybe
so.
That's where you draw your, but I'm a different kind of Super Saiyan.
Well, you know what? The Kamehameha is not the most powerful attack in Dragon Ball Z. It's actually the Spirit Bomb, Paul.
Yeah, but the Spirit Bomb takes forever.
I think I almost set one of those off in here just now.
How is it the ultimate attack when it failed to defeat Frieza, dude?
Yeah.
It did injure him greatly, though.
It injured him.
It did hurt him.
And that's actually how they defeat Majin Buu.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense. How the fuck you not kill Frieza with a spirit bomb, but Majin Buu, who's way stronger than Frieza?
This Dragon Ball Z doesn't really make any sense.
No, nothing in Dragon Ball Z.
It's a show where it's all like, will Frieza be defeated?
Dude, I swear to fucking God,
Frieza defeated.
A lot of times when I watch that show, I just got the sense of like, they're just making this up as they go, aren't they?
I think it was because the manga was so close with the anime that it was like, they had to just...
I know they had to do a bunch of filler.
Isn't that why they did an abridged break?
That's why they did like the whole long snake way thing and all kinds of shit. Why are we talking about DBZ?
I don't know.
I just tried to go Super Saiyan.
That's
at the
true.
Top of the show.
But didn't they come out with an abridged DBZ?
Can you imagine
DBZ,
if
though?
I would have gone Super Saiyan, how amazing the show would have been tonight? If my beard had just turned golden and flowing and I was just like...
All right, I will grant you that it would be cool if you went Super Saiyan.
It would be amazing if I went Super Saiyan, TJ.
No, I'd be moderately neato.
Moderately neato?
Yeah, moderately
You'd
neato.
You would be the
moderately
first recipient
neato?
Of my power attack, TJ.
Paul, I'm already already a Super Saiyan.
I would
look, I'm already blonde. That's all you need.
The punch of 1,000 fists on your face and see if you thought it was funny.
All right, let's see which one of us can actually pull off a Kamehameha attack then.
Oh, okay, you want to have a Kamehameha off?
Yeah.
All right.
It's that. Yeah, let's
you
do
go
it.
First. Challenger goes first.
I gotta go first?
Yeah, hit me with the Kamehameha.
All right. Let's see.
I'm gonna judge this shit, dude. Because he was better. Because, I mean, I've
screaming right into the mic to fucking artificially
inflate
your
shit. And I've pretty much seen every Kamehameha in DBZ history, so...
Well, this isn't about who can yell it the loudest. This is about who can actually summon forth a burst of energy to attack the other person with. Right? That's the criteria.
I want you to shoot me with it, TJ, too, so I'm ready.
All right, well, you'll both obviously be in the path, so... I am going to summon forth the energy, I guess.
Of what?
Of the universe. I don't know.
The universe?
Where do they get the is it from within or is it from without, like the spirit bomb? How's that work?
I think that's how they generate themselves.
That's from within.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I gotta get.
You have to be saying the words at the right time.
I'm gonna turn
too.
To face you, TJ. To receive your blow.
TJ.
You receive my blow?
Yeah.
All right. Receive his load?
I'll make it easy for you,
TJ.
Hold on.
Let me unzip my fly.
Okay. Come on, TJ. We're ready.
All right. I'm doing it. Shut up. It's not easy.
All right.
Give it to me.
I don't know, man. Was I summoning it from the wrong place? I was trying to bring it from my heart. Maybe I should have done it from my balls.
You didn't reach deep enough.
I didn't reach deep enough.
Well, today it felt rushed.
I guess it was kind of naive to think I could just nail it on my first shot.
Let me show you how it's done.
Okay.
You ready? You ready, TJ?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Fuck, dude.
I don't even have to put on the big show you did. Harness my key.
Oh, this is unfair. He's done it before.
Kame-ha-me-ha! Got you, bitch!
You just threw a can at me.
I manifested a can from my key.
Wow, what the fuck,
dude? I mean, it's better than I did.
Got him. Got him.
I'm pretty sure he just palmed a can and threw it at me.
I did not. I manifested a can with the power of my key.
I saw no can before, TJ.
What about you, Scotty? What you got?
Oh, I can't even do it, dude. I can't even try.
You're not even going to try?
He hasn't trained in the Super Saiyan ways.
I'm Krillin, dude.
Okay. Yeah, he's the human.
You're the Krillin of the group.
Yeah, dude, I'm just Krillin. I'm just chilling.
Why not TN? I'd have picked TN.
I want to be Krillin, dude.
All right.
Nah, Scotty should at least be Krillin. You don't have to be TN.
TN's pretty fucking amazing.
Well, maybe in Dragon
Ball.
Gee,
guys, I don't know about that.
TN can do that tri-attack thing. Anyway, let's cover tonight's topic, Dragon Ball Z,
bitch!
Yeah!
All right, so, I think we all have films, and I put this out to the audience, too. I know, by the way, some of you guys are sick of too many movie episodes. This will be the last week of that. Oh, and I should mention that we're actually doing two episodes today. Because a lot of you guys out there have told us that you wanted us to do another Super Bowl commercials thing, which we weren't even planning on doing. But because there's just so many people want it, we're going to go ahead and do it. But it's going to be only for patrons, so...
We give it to you.
Patrons get it. The rest of you guys, you don't get it. Sorry.
Sorry.
Become patrons. It's not that hard. Yep. So anyway, we are going to do a Super Bowl commercial one. But the topic we want to do is... we all have guilty pleasure movies. Movies that, maybe they're not so great, according to most people, but maybe they got a soft spot in our hearts, and we want to talk about some of those. And before we get into the official ones, do you guys have any runners-up or movies that you thought about doing, but you didn't for some reason?
All the other ones that came to my mind are kind of minor cult classics now.
Right.
So, not really. I mean, these are... I do have... There are probably a few more that are pretty shitty that would, probably make it onto this list.
I'll tell you two I considered, if you want.
Sure, go for it.
I considered the movie Deathstalker.
Yeah.
But when I thought about it, I'm like, there's really no way I could defend this as being good. It's just really fucking terrible. But I enjoy it, you know?
Right.
The other one I was thinking about doing was The Room, which, of course, is a huge cult classic at this point. But it's still considered to be a bad movie, and I really don't agree. I actually find it legitimately entertaining beyond just like... Because I know what a so bad it's good feels like. The Room is not that. It's a totally different kind of experience.
I disagree with that. The Room is bad. It's bad.
It's not.
So you're genuinely entertained during the 5-minute long... awkward sex scenes in that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. Okay. And not even just in a, why is he fucking her belly? But, it just, if you treat it as,
the bad R&B, you groove to that?
I mean, if you looked at that movie and thought of it as every decision being conscious to be the way it is, it would be just, a really bizarre art film. The fact that it wasn't intended to be that way, I don't know that destroys what it is. Because, a movie to me that's so bad it's good is usually just, it's over-the-top ridiculous the entire time. And just so much is done so ineptly. But with The Room, some things are actually done pretty competently. Other things are ridiculously inept. I mean, just Tommy Wiseau himself as an oddity of nature. I think if you just observe him, he creates art with his very being.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like... there's something to enjoy there beyond just, oh my God, it's so awful. Because, there's movies like that, like Birdemic Shock and Terror. The feeling I get watching that is not the same as I get during The Room. But I didn't want to squabble over that all day. And plus, everyone knows about The fucking Room. That's
on
not,
top of that,
it's not an interesting recommendation for somebody.
This was more at least in my mind, an underrated film. Sense.
Right, exactly.
Not necessarily a so bad it's good, just a film that you think that's gets panned that doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, that's why I didn't really want to do The Room, because I think there's an argument about, is it just so bad it's good? This is about movies that we think have genuine merit.
Yes.
That are despised. And I think The Room might have fit into that for me, but I don't know. It just, there's too much debate to be had there. So I didn't pick that. I don't know if you guys want to just reveal our picks slowly throughout, or if you want to just kind of do an overview or whatever. We could maybe do that at the end. I don't care.
Well, how did you just pull them in order? Or?
Yeah, they're all in order, so we can reveal them one by one.
I think that's probably the best way to do it.
So we're going to start with Scotty's, because each of us picked three movies with the criteria of this is a movie that's not well-received by critics or audiences or whatever, but we think it's fucking good. We think it's a solid fucking movie.
Right, and then we're going to take a look at the aggregate of what critics and audience think about these movies and...
Yes, that's correct. So let's start with Scotty. Start with Scotty's three picks here. We're not going to alternate between the three of us. We're just going to go through everyone's list one by one, because that's how I have it ordered here.
So the first one, why don't you show the people?
So the first film we're going to look at is a movie called Event Horizon.
Infinite Space.
A science fiction film from 1997. Go ahead and read that.
Coming in January, dude.
Coming.
I have to slob Scotty's knob on this one. I love this movie, so I can't agree with him more here.
My first exposure to this movie was TJ actually went to see it in theaters. Mm. And I totally misunderstood what the movie is about. Like, he's like, it's Event Horizon. I'm like, that's something to do with it being underwater or something. He's like, no. And I'm like, that sounds lame. So he went to see this. It was totally up his alley.
You went with us.
No, I didn't. I saw something else. I thought it was like, that sounds like, for some reason, I was young. So I somehow.
I remember seeing it with Uncle Guy.
Yeah, there was like some explanation to me that was like, I somehow thought it was about it being underwater or something. So I saw some kids' movies.
You could maybe even consider it in some ways a more faithful adaptation of Doom than the actual Doom movie.
Unless you're going to get to that. But so. My first exposure to this, really beyond you seeing it back when it came out in theaters, its theatrical run, was I saw a Nostalgia Critic review of it, and it's like this. So obviously he pans the movie largely, but it says there's obviously positive things about the film. So I went and checked it out, and I can see that a lot of the criticism for the film, but at the same time, I think it's really one of those. It's just another example of studio meddling that just and of course another big thing is test audiences.
Right,
because so originally when this film was released, the test audiences thought it was way too gory. So the guy that directed this had just come off, Paul W.S. Anderson had come off, Mortal Kombat, which was a huge fucking hit. I mean, everyone knows Mortal Kombat. So, I mean, Mortal Kombat's a hit. And he kind of, obviously the studio just wants him, like, make Mortal Kombat 2. Because they're a studio, they want to do a cash. And he's like, no, I want to do this rated R, haunted house, a fucking, you know, basically the haunted house in space concept, you know, kind of like. And you definitely see the influence of Alien on the aesthetic in the film and the design of the ship and everything, especially the core.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty interesting film overall. Do you guys want to talk about the plot of the film, or do you just want to kind of talk about the...
It's your pick. You got, I mean, whatever.
Kind of the reception.
Why, just, you know, whatever, why is it here? You know, like, I mean...
Why
you,
is it here?
You because, talk about, because you talk about, so far you've talked about the film that could have been. Why is the film as it exists now here on this list?
Oh, sure. Well, that's kind of simple, because I
and
feel
like
this... And
if you want, I also have the Rotten Tomato feel like page, this, so you can respond to critics directly if you want to.
We might do that, but what I see with this film is that this is way, way fucking closer to what an actual Doom movie than the fucking one with the Rock. I mean, that's a terrible fucking movie. You know, this fucking science experiment gone awry. That shit, in my mind, that didn't fucking work. This one is like opening a fucking portal to another dimension, traveling outside of our space and time, and then bringing something terrible back. And the fucking horror of that ship, the atmosphere is actually pretty good. The gore is still, they're like the beginning, one of the beginning scenes of the movie is just a gore shot where it's like the guy basically is like, he's like having a dream and his eyes are just fucking, and like the woman's eyes are removed and his eyes are removed. And it's just like this kind of like satanic occult sort of thing that's going on. And it's just his Sam Neill's slow derangement throughout the film. I mean, in some
Sam
ways.
Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne are great in this movie.
Yeah, they're great in this movie. Like I said, it's very, it has a really strong tie and it has a really strong vibe from like an Alien movie. So they're definitely kind of aping some of the stuff from that.
There's also a pretty heavy, like, kind of Lovecraftian thing.
Oh, yeah.
Draped over it. The fact that we opened a dimension, or, you know, the ship opens a dimension, or a portal into a dimension.
So basically, in the
crazy thing.
The plot of this movie is the ship you see here disappears. Like, it's going to be some experiment to, like, bend space and time and to try to travel wherever they want to in the universe, basically, like, creating an Event Horizon, a black hole. So that ship just disappears, and no one knows what happens. And suddenly, the ship appears. I think it's like outside of Neptune, and they're gonna and this crew, this guy Sam Neill, right, is the doctor that basically designed the ship. Like, all the theories and stuff behind the ship, he designed. And Lawrence Fishburne and his team are sent to go trying to figure out what has happened on the ship. And slowly but surely, they just realize the ship is totally abandoned. It's just frozen in space. Everything on the ship is just like, it's basically the same temperature as the space around it. And they just slowly but surely just discover the horror that's transpired through. Like, there's like they're trying to translate. One of the things in the movie is like there's video footage of the people kind of just losing their minds. And they're trying to figure out what's going on. And it's just a really, there's all these pieces in the film. I don't feel they quite click together, so it does come across a little bit disjointed, but I think that it's really, like I said, a lot of the gore and the stuff that would have made it push it over the edge of being a really great film, they weren't allowed to do that. I mean, the test audiences thought it was too gory, so they cut a lot of the cool, interesting gore
by the way,
and cult
scenes. A lot of the critics that panned this movie that gave it, I'll tell you the statistics here, 6.7 on IMDb, so pretty reasonably respected by the general public. 27% on Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. Really dismal score. 35 on Metacritic, also a pretty dismal score. And I can tell you a lot of their criticisms of this movie rotate around. It's just so gory. It's
really
so
not.
Bloody. There's so much.
I mean, there's a little
blood.
Bit of that.
It's gross.
There's a hint of that. Also, when you direct a film,
seems like a really dumb criticism of the fucking movie. It's supposed to be that way,
and
right?
It was cut way too quickly because it was on such a tight schedule to try to make some fucking release. I'm not sure when exactly it was released in the original one, but the Directors Guild of America gives a director guaranteed 10 weeks, and Paul W. Anderson did not have that time. Should actually cut this film. Like I said, there's already problems with the test audiences and people thinking it's too gory. So you basically just fucking kneecap this film. This whole concept is supposed to be a rated R fucking horror film, science fiction horror film in space, and it's just already, it's basically censored. There's a lot of footage that they said is, like, famously of this film that's been lost that, you know, people are hoping it'll be recovered or whatever, but that's pretty much been dismissed. Like, that's never going to happen.
Right.
We're never going to get the actual director's cut version of this film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a film that I think was just so hobbled, and what it could have been is probably a really interesting classic film. I still think it's a good film, but to get that kind of iconic status that it kind of, in a way, deserves, and it kind of gets that now for being a really bad film, I don't feel it's deserved. I feel like it's a film that's been panned for a lot of superficial reasons, like it's too much violence,
yeah,
and there's too much gore.
I'll tell you what, when I went, I'll even show you here. Like, when I went to this page here for the film, this critics page, I read through a lot of these reviews, and they're just really, like, the criticisms of the movie just seem really superficial. Like, they don't really justify their bad rating at all. Like, it just tends to be, the main criticisms I've seen are stuff you mentioned. A lot of them say it's disjointed, which I don't remember the film extremely well, but
it's not disjointed.
I remember the basic plot of the fucking thing. Yeah, you open a portal to some crazy dimension where everything is fucking nuts. That shouldn't make complete sense. It's supposed to be fraying the edges of sanity. I remember the visuals being cool. I remember the shots of, like, fire in space and all that shit.
Well, the visual effects are good. There are parts of it that I don't think flow together very well. I think that also, another problem is some of the writing is kind of clunky for the film. Some of the names they give the characters, like that baby bear shit.
But, I mean, you see here, a lot of this shit,
some of it's a little hokey, but I think overall it doesn't hugely detract from the film.
A lot of these negative reviews you see here, though, the main thrust of their thing is really just whining about the gore that's in there. So I can't even imagine how they would have reacted to the intended vision if they couldn't even handle the amount of gore in this watered down version that got released.
But it doesn't deserve the rating it received at all.
So, like, what would you say?
I'd say a more appropriate rating.
Like, right now,
if I could control the Rotten Tomato, I would give it probably around an 80%.
So you think it belongs in the 80s, and now it's in the 20s. Yeah. So there's a huge disparity to where you think it should be versus where it is now. What do you think still works about the film? Because I feel like a lot of the stuff you talked about was kind of like, you know, this is the film that could have been.
Visuals of the film really lend itself to it. It gives you almost a 2001 Space Odyssey thing. Like, obviously, they developed some pretty cool models for the film. Like I said, the inner core that kind of makes the ship go from dimension to dimension. That is a really cool thing. So this giant orb, and you come into this room, and it's a very...
Yeah, I remember that thing.
There's some really great shots, and just like when you're like just kind of in awe of the design of the ship. And I mean, the whole concept in itself, I really enjoy. I really enjoy that this like, kind of portal to another dimension just being opened and just the chaos it brings with it. And it's like the dangers of this, like almost like the pitfall and kind of the message of the movie. It's like when you open Pandora's box, you don't know what's going to, you know, when you do something like this, when this boundary is pushed, what is going to happen? And I kind of, I guess it's kind of like, you know, that old thing with technology and the warning of what we can, you know, humanity can eventually accomplish, you know, and obviously the doctor being corrupted by his vision of just, no, progress at any cost. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, I felt, you know, a lot of the elements of the story worked. I liked it. Like I said, I think this is a more faithful Doom movie than the one that actually has the name slapped on it. And I've always been kind of interested in that concept. So that's honestly, to me, what really worked in the film. And I think it's genuinely a scary, unsettling film.
Yeah, I can't really bring myself to disagree much. I remember watching it in the theaters with Uncle Guy when I was a kid. I guess 97, I'd have been 12. Probably about the perfect age to see this kind of movie. And I remember really enjoying it then. And I probably saw it again when I was like 15 or 16 and really enjoying it then. Haven't seen it, so it's basically half a lifetime ago that I've last seen this movie.
Well, you should definitely check it out.
I've seen this movie a bunch of times. I saw it for the first time at 16 in the theaters, yeah. And it blew me away there. I loved it. It was like a sorely needed gap in good horror movies and gory horror movies and sci-fi tinged horror movies at that time, and I don't know. I just really like the movie.
So we're all pretty much in agreement that this film is underrated.
It's dog. Yeah.
Vastly.
The ratings for this are dog shit. Don't listen to them.
Don't listen to the critics. And because Scotty apparently has a boner, and this is a movie I literally caught him jerking off to, by the way. But
that's why I picked it, dude.
Since Scotty has a boner for science fiction movies made in 1997.
I do.
Starship Troopers. A new kind of enemy, a new kind of war.
This is like
a new kind of masturbatory experience.
You know what, dude? It's a verse of film. It truly is. No, it really is. This is one of those movies that came when it came out was just grossly misunderstood.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and give you the rundown real quick if you want. 7.2 on IMDb. So pretty respected there. 63% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not a great rating. It's not a dismal one. And 51 on Metacritic, which is that's considered bad. I guess a 63 is not a great score either. I will tell you the criticisms of this movie tend to be from the perspective of people who I don't think really got it. Like, I know these critics fancy themselves very intelligent. I don't think they understood that it was criticizing this. Fascism and jingoism and militarism.
Well, look,
I think that they thought it was actually embracing those things.
Who directed the film, I mean, called RoboCop basically the American Jesus. I mean, this is someone that uses this, he kind of uses this over-jingoistic macho sort of shit, but he makes it more subversive to show kind of like how flawed and self-serving it is. But like, Starship Troopers, I can see the criticism of it, but that's people that take it at face value, and I think a lot of people really miss that. I mean, I'm not saying as a kid that I totally got it. I kind of just like they were killing giant bugs.
There's also people who take it at face value and like it. So,
yeah, of course. There's always
like, that's great. Fascism. Cool.
Yeah, the only people that can vote are people in the military.
That's a good idea.
Well, and the whole idea, too. So basically the premise is, like, you have this guy named Rico, and it's like, oh, shit, my girlfriend's going to go off and join the fucking military, which is, that's kind of like the big thing for people to do in this universe. That's the only way you can vote and become an actual citizen of the world that you live in, is that you have to have mandatory military service. So these bugs, quote-unquote, attack Earth and Rio de Janeiro, which they all live in, and do massive damage. But as the movie progresses, and the more you learn about it, it seems very suspect that this primitive bug culture launched any sort of attack on any fucking planet through interstellar means. And it's really just a social commentary on fascism and how militaristic, you know, people and how people really kind of go and praise that, and how especially in this society where it's hyper militarized, how that's seen as the only viable path in which your opinion actually matters, if you've actually gone off and killed these bugs or whatever it is. Now, it's based on some novel. This novel has nothing to do with that. It's not even worth mentioning.
Yeah, the novel was pretty... The source material was pretty much ignored in the same way that The Shining source material was ignored by Stanley Kubrick.
And it's very reminiscent of just going to another country, as you'll see, and just fighting just basically people with some fucking AK-47s.
I think you could kind of think of it as a really violent episode of Black Mirror where the message is not as much shoved down your fucking throat. Like, it's just, like, more subtle.
But it's,
and
like,
it's weird to call this movie subtle because it really doesn't seem to be, but I guess it is.
Like, when they go to this planet to fight the bugs, it's just exactly what a military blunder would be. So the first time they're like, okay, they're dumb bugs. All we have to do is go down there and kill them. For some reason, they think that's a good idea. So they're routed, basically. All these humans get killed from all these planets. It's like, oh, shit, we made a mistake. Now we're just going to bombard them from space. So it kind of makes them seem like they're viable enemies, but they're really not. The bugs are pretty much just... I mean, they're hostile, but they're kind of hapless at the same time. You know what I mean?
So what exactly were you jerking off to in this film, Scotty?
The lava
bugs.
Be
honest.
The lava bugs. I've admitted it several times.
That's the truth. That's not... You're not kayfabing it. You wanted the lava bugs?
I wanted them deeply and passionately.
Wow.
I'm sorry, dude. If lava bugs don't do it for you...
I mean...
So I'm going to go ahead and read a few of these little excerpts here from these reviews. Lacking the sophistication of the average comic book, it compensates with panoramic attack sequences reminiscent of the Japanese swarm attacks in American war movies.
Look at that dude's picture.
Yep.
It's just an old vampire-looking dude.
Yeah, whatever, William Lacey.
Every day. This movie made me want to puke. How dare anybody make a film? Ew.
Liam Lacey.
Of course, from Canada.
Lacks the courage of the book's fascist conclusions. Say it's not fascist enough? I don't
really agree with that conclusion.
Maybe the filmmakers are so their slam-bang visual effects they don't give a hoot about the movie's implications. That person doesn't get it.
That guy's a moron. Not this guy, but the guy before is a moron.
Well, this guy, too.
Because remember they have the thing at the end where it's like, especially showing, like, we can beat these bugs, we can fight them, and it's like they're basically making an ad at the end of the movie where it's like, Rico's Roughnecks.
It's your buddy.
I'm taking over the unit, and they show all the new generation, but it's like all these people are just indoctrinated into this bullshit. So nothing. The conclusion you draw from this is, yeah, all these people have lost, you know, and obviously there's a cost they paid for this, but at the same time they haven't learned anything.
Let's see what Paul's
just recruiting the next generation of idiots to go off and fight in some motherfucking war zone.
Yeah, let's see what Paul's buddy thinks. Roger Ebert, 2 stars. Starship Troopers is the most violent kiddie movie ever made.
Full stop. I stop reading right there.
I call it a kiddie movie not to be insulting, but to be accurate. Its action, characters, and values are pitched at 11-year-old science fiction fans.
I was 10 when I saw this, so...
That makes it true to its source. It's based on a novel for juveniles by Robert A. Heinlein. I read it to the point of memorization when I was in grade school. I have improved since then, but the story... has not.
Oh my god.
Boom!
This fart sniffing
atomic bomb of criticism.
Wow. I hate this man.
The premise.
Fiery red hot passion.
Blah, 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 blah. Let's see. It doesn't matter since the bugs aren't important except for his props. Da, 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 da. Where's the criticism at? I don't need a fucking whole recap. What's lacking is exhilaration and sheer entertainment.
What?
Unlike the Star Wars movies, which embraced a joyous vision and great comic invention, Starship Troopers doesn't resonate.
Oh, you mean the Star Wars movie that you panned when it first came out, and then later, when everybody else considered a classic, went back and revised your views on?
It's one-dimensional. We smile at the satirical asides, but where's the warmth of human nature? The spark of genius or rebellion? If Star Wars is humanist, Starship Troopers is totalitarian. That's the point. All right. Whatever. He's dead. He's long dead.
Thank goodness.
He's long fucking dead, he is.
I mean, this is not like an overly cerebral or intellectual film.
I think it can be. It really is a film that...
But it's
a film that's going to give back what you put into it, in my opinion.
Well, I said overly. I'm not saying that doesn't make you think at all. I'm just saying that I honestly believe it's just a really enjoyable fucking movie. Like, maybe you can say it's a guilty pleasure, but I mean, honestly, when this came out, I had never seen anything like it. And I haven't really seen much like it since. I mean, it really stood out to me as, like, an interesting film. I mean, yeah, there's obviously multifaceted points. There's just mindless action, if that's what you're looking for. Like you said, the satirical aside, sure, but I kind of liked how the film was presented. Like, do you want to know more? You know, I kind of like a lot of elements of the film. I don't think it's, like, the best film of all time, but I definitely think it's not a fucking piece of shit. And I think at the end of the day, it's, like, it fell into the trap. A lot of criticism of these early CGI films at the time was like, oh, it's just some big fucking action piece. It's a bunch of CGI crap and no one cares. But, I mean, Hollywood's more than embraced CGI. They've shoved it down our throats. And I don't think it's overwhelming in this film. I think a lot of the scenes and, like, action scenes are actually really competently done. And I think a lot of the fucking messages still ring true to this day. And we can say, oh, he's evolved beyond that. But sure, I mean, everyone's going to change in their lives. I don't think it's really even a juvenile novel, if we're being perfectly honest. But I defend the film and think it's a really decent action film from the 90s and science fiction film.
The next film, if no one has anything else to add to the Starship Troopers discussion.
Nope.
Is Perfume, The Story of a Murderer, from the director of Run, Lola, Run, based on the best-selling novel, so which
I read. Have you guys seen this?
I have not seen Perfume.
I have seen the film, and I have read the novel as well, by Patrick Susskind, I think his name was. So IMDb for this movie, really pretty high, 7.5, well-respected movie. Low tomatometer, 58%.
Which I was shocked to see that.
58% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is lower than Starship Troopers. 56 on Metacritic, which is higher than Starship Troopers, so just shows you the disparity between the different critic aggregates there. Not a despised movie, but I believe 58% is considered rotten.
It is considered rotten.
And 56% is considered whatever the Metacritic version of rotten is. So, yeah, not really a well-liked movie, but not really a despised movie.
I like that this movie is a period piece. It's based on a really interesting novel, and it's something that very few people think about, which is smell and scent and how it informs our lives. And I think that the main character, Jean-Baptiste Grenouille, is just a really interesting character. And I think that the portrayal of him in the film is pretty good. I think it's pretty much spot on.
When I smell the retard, I go crazy.
I begin to lick the leg.
And I like the patterns in this film. Like, everyone who's, I mean, from his mother on to everyone whose life he touches, the minute he leaves their life, it's just tragic. Like, when he's born, his mother just abandons him at birth.
Right.
And then of course, they hear the baby, and they go, what's that? You abandon your baby. And she runs off. She meets the gallows. He's sold to an orphanage. Or, you know, or basically the orphanage takes him in because they get money from the government to obviously care for these kids. And immediately, all the kids are kind of like, even as a baby, they're like, there's something wrong with this baby. Like, they don't trust this baby. It's like, and it's just kind of weird. Like, he's just is always just separated from
because
the
even though the whole thing is he's a sociopath, one, he has no scent of his own. Which is why there's an inherent distrust.
But that's a huge realization point in the film. Like,
he has no scent.
It's the minute he gets freedom in the film. It's like he finally, like, he's worked for all these people. His whole life he's just been basically been a serf or an indentured servant or a slave almost.
Yeah.
And he finally goes up to the mountains and he's in a cave. There's nothing around. And it's like the only thing he's him is like he's smelling everything. And he finally comes to the realization at that point. It's like, I don't have a scent.
Right. And that's the reason people don't trust him, because on some level, you know, that him not having a scent makes people reject him and makes it
and they
fear him and almost makes him a non-entity in their minds. Like, because he has no scent, he's forgettable to people, but at the same time, repellent. Like, they don't remember his face. They don't remember his name. They don't remember things about him. He's almost like a shadow. And he also, on top of having no scent of his own, he has a very powerful sense of smell.
Yeah.
The reason he becomes a murderer is because he starts murdering women who have this very divine, powerful scent.
And that, like in the movie, it's illustrated by, like, he's delivering some furs and he just catches the scent of this woman, and it's just irresistible. And like you can tell, like, everything else he's doing just becomes secondary. He just wanders off. He's wandering the streets of Paris until he finds her, and it's like. And it's just like a revelation for him. And then he's like, he dedicates his life to capturing this scent, this kind of sublime pinnacle of, like, humanity, like, it's, which basically, of course, is in the novel, beautiful redheaded women that are young.
And he becomes a perfumer himself, and he actually figures out that there are certain scents that he can give himself that will make him be treated in different ways. Like, he can make himself respected or feared or whatever he wants based on the scents that he's giving himself.
And I love the end of this film. I love, and I know, yes, Paul, you're one that hates endings, but this film has a great ending. I mean, the novel as well has a great ending. I will always remember it, and I'm not going to spoil it here because I think if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check out this film. What are the criticisms of this film that you found?
If you go to the page here, you see it's
so rotten.
Pretty well liked by audiences overall, but not as well received by critics. Let's see. Hated this movie. Hated it. Richard Roper.
Okay. Where's the
criticism? Hated it. I hated it.
I just hated it.
I just didn't like it. Perfume, the story of a murderer, is another nauseous example of style over content, a toxic tale of serial homicides set in 18th century France that creeps you out faster than it makes you think.
Rex Reed is another bloated piece of shit that you should never listen to when it comes to movies.
These are all bloated pieces of shit. I despise this movie more or less for the promises it squanders. I don't whatever. Know. Like, it's always such vague bullshit when they dismiss these films. Let's see what Richard Roper's detailed review has to say. I clicked the wrong thing there.
I don't think it's available.
Is it not?
No.
Wow, that's bullshit.
Yeah, some of them aren't.
Hated this movie, hated it.
Hated it. Didn't like it.
Can't see Rex Reed's. No, you can see the ones that say full review underneath them. You can see those.
Yeah, that's weird. None of these show you shit.
Here's this guy at Cinemaphile. This is full review.
All right, let's see what his full review says. Oh, God, it's so long. Wow. Blah, 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 blah. I don't want to... I think he was talking about the ending there. I didn't want to give it away.
So, bad endings. So, he actually thought the ending was bad.
Blah, blah, blah.
I think a lot of these people find these over-the-top sort of scenes to be gratuitous. Oh, look, he gave Alien Covenant 3 stars, so...
There lies the launch point of Perfume, the Story of a Murderer, a film that takes on the strange mission of creating a character whose loathsome misdeeds are a consequence of something more than just your run-of-the-mill murderous tendencies. Some would read between the lines and discover only warped reasoning to frame his psyche, but there's a lot that makes sense here, even if it's just for the sake of following the story's volatile dramatic currents. Blah, blah, blah. It doesn't sound like a criticism so far. Doesn't sound like something you'd say about a one-star movie.
Yet again, I'm not saying that just originality itself is just good, but I mean, I haven't really seen many films or hardly any that were sent to play such a crucial role to the film, and especially in this context.
He says the plot is misguided, lacks artistic distinction, bad editing. I don't know. It's just a bunch of bullshit.
I mean... Ultimately, this is all subjective, but I just don't feel those are huge flaws in the movie. Even though it has about, it's a 147-minute runtime, it doesn't feel that. I don't feel like this is an overly long film. You have great performances.
Poster is cool as fuck, too.
Alan Rickman is in this film, and he has a small role, but I think he's pretty competent in the film. He's kind of like the guy in the town that's kind of advocating for different measures of how to prevent this, because he has especially a beautiful daughter.
He's got a vested interest in, like,
yeah,
you
and,
know.
And he's kind of also, like you said, there's almost like a primordial thing that he realizes that she is definitely a target for this person and whatever's going on in this town where he's basically doing these killings. And I mean,
maybe not. Maybe she smells like shit, you know? You never know.
The lead guy, I think his name is Ben Whishaw.
Yeah. Let's see, I could probably see the cast.
He turns a very good performance in the film. Like I said, this isn't a very expository film. There's a lot of very long dramatic scenes.
I remember there actually being very little dialogue in this movie.
That's what I'm saying. So it tells a lot of the story visually, which I think is definitely a plus. I mean, the scene like at the end with the crowd, I mean, that's just a great scene visually. I mean, the visuals work to me. I don't find the editing to be...
R for aberrant behavior clunky. Involving nudity, violence, sexuality, images.
I think with a lot of these fucking things it comes down to is these people are all fuddy-duddies and they're stodgy, and anything that's different or subversive or doesn't have the same ideals.
I do also remember liking Dustin Hoffman in this movie as well.
Oh, he was great in this movie. Dustin Hoffman has...
he's almost always great in the movie.
Yeah, and he has a pretty juicy role in it. Not a huge role, but
he has a comic role to a degree.
What's that?
Hasn't he been Me Too'd?
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, okay, never mind. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. His performance is terrible. Terrible film. Terrible movie. Terrible for even considering putting Dustin Hoffman in anything because he's evil. So anyway, that's Scotty's picks. So Scotty, would you be curious to know the averages?
Yes, I would.
Because I went ahead and I totaled the averages of your films. So
I know you could do math, DJ. I'm surprised.
Well, I had an app or something did it for me. But IMDb, your average IMDb score, 7.1.
Pretty high.
So you kind of cheated there. I think your film picks are kind of bullshit because it's not even a bad fucking IMDb score. These are all films that general audiences like. Just films that critics didn't care for enough. 49% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is rotten.
That's rotten.
47% on Metacritic, which is whatever. They're stupid. I don't know what their fucking shit
whatever,
is. They
yeah.
don't have a rotten or whatever. It's red or yellow
Shitty.
Or whatever.
It's poopy.
It's on the shit scale. I don't know. I don't use their site.
Well, these are underrated films because, I mean, for the most part, maybe with the exception of Starship Troopers, I don't hear many people like.
Why don't you defend a film that's genuinely fucking hated, Scotty? Like I had the balls to do on my list.
Most of these films had a lot of detractors and critics, TJ. I mean, you can view it differently, but I think you're wrong.
No, I think you're a fucking stupid piece of shit, Scotty. That's what I think.
You're entitled to your incorrect opinion.
You cocksucker. You're a bad person, Scotty. You're a bad fucking person.
I believe in the room. You're the bisexual. Oh, Paul, actually, you are as well.
Yep.
So you guys are definitely the cocksuckers over me.
I guess so, yeah. I never said anything. I'm not taking a side. Because TJ, I think, is the one that cheated on his list.
What I do? What I cheat? How to cheat?
Well, we'll see when you get there.
All right. So, whoa. Who picked this?
TJ.
This is my pick.
This is a TJ pick for sure.
My first fucking pick. Friday the 13th, part VII, that's 7, The New Blood. On Friday the 13th, Jason is back, but this time, someone's waiting.
Oh.
Dun 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 dun.
So,
IMDb, 5.3.
That's pretty low.
Rotten Tomatoes, 29%.
Damn.
Metacritic, 13.
So this is in the fucking toilet, dude.
So, yeah. Not liked by critics at all. Not that any of the Friday the 13th movies were. And not even really, didn't really resonate with audiences very much either. But, man, fuck all those stupid sons of bitches, because this movie has got some merit. And I'll tell you why.
Why, TJ?
Because the premise of the movie is essentially Jason versus Carrie, but they didn't have the rights to Carrie, so they just gave some other bitch psychic powers. And you know what? It delivers on that fucking premise. There is a huge 20-minute fucking battle at the end of this movie between Jason and this telekinetic bitch that is well worth the price of admission. Jason never goes down harder than he does in this fucking movie. They blow him up, they drop a house on him, they fucking do all kinds of crazy shit. They strangle him, she throws shit at him psychically. His mask breaks off after she causes it to squeeze his head until his fucking pus is coming out of the back and shit. I mean, it's brutal. And he fucking, I think the unmasked Jason in this movie is the best unmasked Jason they ever did in any of the fucking films. Now, the way he does ultimately die, I will grant you, is lame. She somehow uses her powers in a way that it was never established she could, to bring her dead father back to life, to wrap a chain around Jason and drag him to the bottom of Camp Crystal Lake. So that makes zero sense. But you know what? It's a fucking Friday the 13th movie. I'm not expecting high art out of this motherfucker, but you know what? It took a fucking stale-ass premise of Jason kills a bunch of teenagers. Jason kills a bunch of teenagers. Now, he does do that once again, but you know what? They fucking gave it a little twist, and I think it works.
I mean, don't you think there's a better way of doing that than inventing a bitch
superpower?
I'm
not favorite dream of a stoner, dude.
I'm not saying that there's not a better way. Of course, there's probably better ways, but you know what? They decided what they were going to do. They picked their gimmick. They did it, and I think they used it to optimal effect.
But did they do it well?
They did it pretty fucking well, dude.
I mean, look, I think they definitely
last 20 minutes of that movie are badass. And the rest of it is just your standard Jason movie. If you liked any other Jason movie, you should like this one just fine. There's nothing bad about it. The kills are good.
I really don't think it's that great of a Jason film.
I mean, I haven't seen this movie in a long time.
I think it's okay, though.
But I remember feeling, like, pretty ripped off by it. I felt like it spent way too much time focused on the dumb chick with psychic powers and way too little time focusing on Jason. And quite frankly, I didn't like seeing Jason beat so fucking hard. He's the hero of these movies, and I feel like this movie was trying to take this new psychic bitch and make her the hero.
Hey, you know, Jason had to triumph over some fucking... But Jason always loses. Just like Tom from Tom and Jerry. Just like, you know, any other fucking villain who's constantly foiled. Especially in these 80s horror movies. Whether it be Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger or whatever.
I'll tell you what, Jason... Didn't Jason win in Freddy versus Jason? Or they kind of team up?
Jason did pretty much win. Although Freddy did that little stupid wink at the end. Like, I didn't really lose because we can't definitively take a side on this. But you know what? It did take a side in Carrie versus Jason, which is what I've always called this movie. And it said Carrie would kick Jason's fucking ass. And that's just that.
Do you think that that's actually true, though?
Like,
if you took the Carrie from the, you know, original story and dropped her in the room with the best representation of Jason.
Yes.
You think Carrie wins that?
I think Carrie fucks him up, dude.
Hmm.
I mean, look, he's got some skills, you know, and he gives her a run for her money. That is depicted, but you know what? It takes a lot of her. She's got to do a lot against him. She's got to throw about a billion things at him. She's got to turn his mask against him. She's got to drop a fucking house on him. Well, first she drops him through the floor. Then she drops the house on him, and his ass still comes back for more. And it isn't until she somehow develops necromancy, which I guess Carrie never had that skill.
Yeah, I mean, so how's, that's kind of
See, that's bullshit.
I mean, I guess Carrie did maybe kind of have that skill because her hand does come out of the grave at the end, but it's just a dream. But is it really? Who knows? So I don't know. Yeah, I think Carrie would fuck. I think Carrie would fuck Jason up. She doesn't have to be near you to do something to you. You know, she can fucking send anything at you at any given time
until you break out the fucking necromancy angle. Was she really gonna win?
I don't know. Probably not. They shouldn't have done that.
Well, see, the movie should have ended with her, quote-unquote, beating him, and then the last few frames of the movie should be her getting eviscerated by him.
If you're going to make that criticism, then you can say that about every Jason movie. Jason should just perpetually win every time.
Well, he does, though.
Not really.
He does.
He pretty much always gets defeated and wrapped up by the end of the movie.
Because he always comes back.
Yeah, but he comes back from this, too. He comes back in a way worse movie, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh, God, that's awful.
Where... For a movie, look, that's another thing. This actually delivered on its promise. Jason Takes Manhattan did not deliver on the promise of Jason in Manhattan. Most of it takes place on a fucking boat.
Yeah, that does suck.
So that was a total ripoff. This one I don't think is a ripoff. I think if you want to see... Look, if you're like me and you want to see Jason battle a telekinetic bitch, it is in this movie, it happens, and it's good.
Well, fair enough.
And the rest of the movie leading up to it, pretty mediocre, but I don't know. It's got a cool climax. And I've shown it to other people, and most of them have agreed with me, man. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, whatever.
Unlike these assholes here. Next movie, I wanted to... Well, I guess we could take a look at some of the reviews here.
Defend yourself.
See, the audience don't like it either.
Of course they don't.
I love it, man. I think it's great. It's probably my favorite Jason movie. The filmmakers have mastered the blood... but not the tedium of all the predictable killings, nor have they eliminated the hate women subtext of the... Oh, boo-hoo, Gene Siskel. Me too, fucking before me too, me too, you piece of shit. Sexist, boo. Jason gets his ass kicked by a woman in this. Yeah, how's it sexist?
That angle doesn't really make much
you
sense.
You cocksucker. Look at all these good reviews, though. Felix Vasquez Jr. feels me. By this seventh entry in the series, being different just for the sake of it really is justification enough. Well, that sounds positive to me. Whatever. Does this even appeal to hardcore Jason fans? I doubt it. Well, your doubt is misplaced, cunt.
I mean, I don't know, dude. I'm a pretty hardcore Jason fan, and that movie don't appeal to me.
Not like me.
Apparently not. I'm not willing to suck the dick of Carrie versus Jason, dude.
A gimmick movie.
Man,
nasty,
no one understands this fucking film.
A movie
dude.
Where the image of fucking Jason was further abused.
Yeah, look at that shit. That's pretty fucking cool, dude.
I think that they did it worse, but for you to say that is what we should look at and
that's
say that
the definitive
Jason looks
best,
like,
dude.
I mean, that may be true, but it's still awful.
Nah, dude. It's badass.
Awful. That's pretty awful.
It's badass, dude. And the animatronics on it and shit are good. And that is the legendary fucking Kane Hodder playing Jason in this movie, because he's a badass motherfucker, dude. He's the one true definitive Jason in my mind.
Well, audiences and critics disagree with you,
Jason. Well, you know what? You know what I say to people? Go out there and check this movie out. Tell me if I'm wrong, bitch. Tell me if I'm fucking wrong.
Whenever they say you're wrong, you're just going to say you're right.
Yeah, they're stupid if they're disagreeing.
There you go. So don't bother with telling.
All right, anything. Next movie I decided I wanted to defend. A movie that every time I've ever tried to show it to anyone, they've always either left the room or said, this sucks, let's turn it off. But I think it's fucking awesome.
I don't know. I don't understand that. Because, yeah, this movie is fucking great.
Death to Smoochie, IMDb 6.4, Rotten Tomatoes 42, Metacritic 38.
Dude, you know what the problem with this one? The last one I don't agree with you on, but I totally agree with you on this one. This was before its time, dude. It really is. Because I think if you made this today, this would be a hit.
You think so?
Oh, totally, dude. It's just it's way more meta. But at the time, there really wasn't a thing. But now it's super popular to be meta.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
It is super meta, and it's also just real dark. It's a super bleak comedy. It does have kind of a weirdly forced positive resolution, but
yeah, whatever.
Aside from that shit, it's a really cynical fucking movie. It's really dark. It's all about people who are, charities and children's shows and all this stuff are all just really dark and exploitative and all this horrible shit's going on.
I gotta tell you what a fucking joy it was to see Robin Williams get to play a genuine villain.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Not one of these relatable everyman roles, which is really most of his career, that's how he was cast.
Yeah.
You know, and to see Robin Williams really let off the chain in a movie to be a total fucking just insane.
And you know, I don't even like Edward Norton,
sociopath.
And I like him in this.
And Edward Norton is brilliant in this. I don't know what your fucking hard on against Edward Norton is. Edward Norton is an asshole. I don't care about that.
I like that about him.
Yeah, but you can't deny. I just don't know, dude. He's been brilliant in so many movies.
Yeah, he's been shit in so many movies.
Like what?
Like Hulk, or even his.
That movie was shit, though.
Yeah, the movie was shit, but he wasn't good in it either.
Well, I'll give you that, but I mean, I'm not saying everything he's ever done is great.
His breakout fucking role, Primal Fear, go watch that movie.
Movie's good.
Everyone was coming over it. Look, I thought so too, but I went and revisited it. It does not hold up. I watched it this year. It's a piece of shit.
Well, not this year. I watched it in 2018. It is not a piece of shit.
That movie is not a piece of shit. You know what? He's terrible in it.
We're talking about Death.
His accent is nothing at all. Whatever. Yeah, you're right.
No, you're right.
Fuck this Edward Norton digression bullshit. Yeah,
well, I just don't like you shitting all over a fucking good actor.
Edward Norton
sucks dick.
He sucks dick.
Well, Fight Club.
Danny DeVito's great in this movie, too.
He was good in Fight Club. Oh, Danny DeVito. Didn't Danny DeVito direct this?
I believe he did.
Let me check.
All I know is that he was fantastic in it.
I don't know why people don't love this movie. I really don't get it.
Dude, this... Of all the movies on this list, the one with the hate that I understand the least... is Death of Smoochie. I can understand if Event Horizon's too bloody for me. Whatever, you're a pussy. That's fine. Starship Troopers, you don't get it. It's too fucking smart for you. Perfume, maybe it's boring or it's too slow.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th is schlock, which I admit it is. I think it's good schlock, but it's schlock. Death to Smoochie is a legitimately smart, funny, interesting goddamn movie with compelling characters and shit. And 42%? Fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, this is a movie that has a lot to say. A lot of that criticism is aimed directly at the entertainment industry. This kind of mass-produced shit that we're given and how the people behind it don't really matter. It's all a bunch of marketing decisions.
So here we go. Let me just read some reviews if you want. Let's see. Is there an Ebert review?
A broad braying yuck fest that revels in coarse jokes.
Coarse jokes!
Lacks the courage of its own cynicism and refuses to develop its own premise.
What other movie has the premise that this movie has?
None.
So what does that mean? What do you mean?
This is another one of those fart-sniffing critic things where I've decided I dislike this movie.
Read Richard Roper's. Read Richard Roper's, dude.
All right. I'm sure that some country, maybe France or something, will hail this as a work of genius because it's so incredibly awful.
Wrong again, dude.
What a fucking douche.
What are you throwing France under the bus for, you fucker?
You know why? Because Richard Roper, like his buddy Roger Ebert, may Satan keep his soul in eternal torture, is not a critic. He's an industry shill. You know why Richard Roper didn't like this movie? Because his bosses at Viacom and Sony and MGM didn't like this movie because it was a movie that portrayed them as a bunch of murdering narcissists that hated the people that they made movies for.
This is apparently a bad review. It says a blacker than black comedy. That's a positive review in my book.
Yeah, like when did that become a bad thing? An awful, embarrassing movie? No, an awful, embarrassing take on a great subversive film.
Considering that it's meant to be a comedy about a TV children's show, DeVito's picture is particularly irritating, nasty, and mean-spirited.
What the fuck? That's the fucking point.
The point.
That juxtaposition is at the heart of the humor of the fucking film, you Emmanuel Levy.
How would it be an interesting film if the behind the scenes was like, everyone gets along, everyone's great, and we're having a great old time here making fucking smoochie. Woohoo! It's wonderful! That wouldn't be an interesting film. Where's the conflict? Where are the fucking interesting characters? Like, everyone in this movie, I mean, look, Robin Williams is great in this fucking film. Edward Norton, I would say, is also great in this film.
I mean, I think for this
I don't
one,
remember Danny DeVito's role too much in this, but like,
to understand why the industry shills hated this, a brief overview of the plot. It's about a kid's show run by a guy played by Robin Williams.
Yeah, who Rainbow gets caught up, Randall or something like that.
He gets caught up in a scandal, taking money for appearances on the show, and is run out of town and is replaced by this kind of newcomer to the kids show scene, Edward Norton, who plays Smoochie the Rhino. And he's a total fucking amateur, but he's basically manipulated by the big corporations into becoming the next Rainbow Randolph type character. And he hates it.
And unlike Rainbow Randolph or Randall or whatever his name was, I think it was it Randolph or Randall? Do you remember?
Randolph.
Okay, so unlike Rainbow Randolph, who is Williams's character, who is totally jaded and cynical, Edward Norton actually plays this role very, like,
optimistic,
naive.
Yeah.
Like a babe in the woods.
Yeah.
Like yeah, I'm going to make a kid show.
And he, of course, is totally exploited by everyone around him.
He's like a vegan, and he's all about hyper-positivity and yoga and self-affirmation. And the industry just chews him up. I mean, they treat him like a fucking less than a used condom as soon as he shows up. And they just continuously, slowly but surely, tamp down everything that makes him special and turn him into this corporatized piece of shit, and he goes nuts, just like Rainbow Randolph did. And, you know, it really is a movie, if anything, if it's criticizing anything, it's criticizing the entertainment industry and the way it prepackages these, media figures and feeds them to us.
How it makes them seem like they're genuine people, but in all reality, they're
just genuinely replaceable they are.
Well, they're a PR stunt. Well, I've said this about YouTube itself, just in the influencers of the day, these social media people, it's like, you don't think they can replace you in 2 seconds? Like, they can just go, because these platforms can basically channel anyone they want. They can push anyone up they want.
Yeah, I mean, who the fuck is Ray William Johnson? Anybody remember that guy? Yeah, they these people that are pushed out in front to sell a product are interchangeable. That's what this movie is about. And people don't care. The people ultimately don't care what they're given as long as it's crafted to do the right thing.
And that's the whole point I was making too. Like, this movie is actually more applicable and makes more sense today now than ever before.
Totally agree.
Totally ahead of its time.
And this one has, like, this is the first one that I honestly feel like has been egregiously shit on, especially by Rotten Tomatoes and the overall Metacritic score.
Yeah,
it's undeniable.
This movie is way better than it's given credit
for. It's way smart. It's way funny. It's way dark.
I mean, this should have, I mean, if we're being honest here, this should have a Rotten Tomatoes score in the mid-90s, probably.
I mean, I could see it being a divisive movie and having like a 75 or something and feeling like it got robbed a little bit. That I would feel,
but I'm
though,
saying, like, in a just world.
Yeah, this would be an 85-90 movie. Easy.
Yeah, I think it's up there. I think this is a, this is, to me, like, this should be in contention for being called a fucking classic. Because I can't think of another movie like it.
In my mind,
I remember so many scenes from it. I remember Robin Williams singing, like, the rhino is a Nazi. I remember all that shit,
He is great in this movie, man. They let Robin Williams, because, if you look at Robin Williams' old,
that's another thing. This is a fucking lost, great Robin Williams.
Because they really homogenized Robin Williams in the 80s and 90s. He was a fucking wild man in his comedy days.
He suffered the fate of the characters in this fucking film.
Exactly. he was vulgar and all of that stuff. And this film, like, you could tell, too, that he was vibrating for this character. I mean, like, it's one of his best performances, easily. He connected so much with Rainbow Randolph and the nasty, you know, just misanthropic attitude that he had and the self-serving, sociopathic nature with which he dealt with people. Like, Robin Williams plays that with aplomb in this movie, and it's so fucking great to watch. It's a great, it's one of the lost great performances of Robin Williams. So many people haven't seen this movie, and it's just
it's
a
shocking,
shame.
Yeah.
So many people that cried when he was, you know, when he died and stuff, never, they missed this. They slept on this movie, and it's such a side of Robin Williams that people, I think, deserve to see. Because he was made into 2% milk, you know, and a lot of those movies are really good. I'm not trying to shit on Mrs. Doubtfire. He made that movie a gem.
Yeah,
totally.
Just by his, just simply with his presence.
Now, a lot of movies
you
he
take
could not
Robin
save.
Williams out of that movie, and there's, it's a shit fuck.
Mrs. Doubtfire ain't shit, dude.
No, that's
there's
a,
nobody that could have done
totally
that movie justice.
When I was
him.
A kid, and I mean,
maybe Martin Lawrence. You say Big Mama's House. Yeah, see Big Mama's House?
Get the fuck
the
out
Big
of
the Big Mama's House trilogy.
Get the fuck out of here, TJ. Get the fuck out of
here. I
should have
put
room.
That on here because that's a really, I think it's the great underrated trilogy of our time.
Underrated.
The Big Mama's House trilogy.
Fucking kill yourself, TJ. Jesus.
Underrated, TJ.
Come on.
That's fucking
crazy. All right, so last.
I totally agree. This is an underrated film.
Last pick on my list. I've always had, and I mean, it was. I didn't want to do two horror movies, but I ended up doing two horror movies. Bride of Chucky.
Boo.
Chucky Gets Lucky.
Boo.
I think it's an underrated movie.
Jennifer Tilly's presence alone in this film is enough for me to give it a fucking hard pass.
What do you got against Jennifer Tilly?
I hate her
you
voice.
You hate big titties? And
I know that there are some...
What?
I know that there are some women out there that genuinely have voices like that.
I'm triggered by it, and it's yes. a personal thing. I yes. have a stepmother. She wasn't a wicked stepmother. She's a very nice lady, but she spoke like that.
See,
it was like
I
she's greater
okay.
on me.
I really like her voice, and it makes me just want to fuck her more. So,
really?
Paul?
Yeah.
No.
If Sigmund Freud set you down on a couch, dude,
all right, but
he
look,
would say it's your repressed sexual feelings for your stepmother. Dude.
Let's wow. talk about.
I don't think so.
Let's talk about the merits of this fucking film beyond Jennifer Tilly's fucking
all
voice
right,
and whatever
right.
divisive
let's,
things
let's do
you
it.
Have.
Next
about
movie.
That.
Full stop. Jennifer Tilly's. All right. In
so
it.
Let me
it
tell
sucks.
You. Let me tell you. Okay. So for, IMDb 5.7. All right. Rotten Tomatoes 39%, Metacritic 33%.
That's a pretty panned film.
Now look, I'm not going to argue that this movie should be anywhere in the fucking 90s or the 80s or maybe even the 70s. But I think it deserves a spot in the fucking 60s all on right. Rotten Tomatoes.
That's, I mean, you're almost arguing that it should be the lower end of
I'm saying it should be considered a decently watchable film, and here's why I think that.
I don't know if I agree with that. This is
look,
not a very good
film. I'm not talking about
let's hear him out.
I'm not talking
right,
about C I'm
out.
Not talking about C to Chucky all here, right, all right? Okay. A film I would also defend, by the way.
Of course. But go ahead.
Gross. But everyone hates that
you're
except
just
for me.
Chucky fetishist.
You know what? I don't like Cult of Chucky. I thought it sucked.
Cult of Chucky I like.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone likes that one. I think it's a shit.
Wow.
Look, this movie by the time this movie came out. They understood no one's taking Chucky seriously as a fucking horror threat anymore.
Which happens to all of these
right.
horror franchises.
It happens to all of them. Freddy got funny. Jason never really got funny.
Kind
of
started
he got
to
a
get
little
more
silly.
Jokey and silly, though.
He did get a little silly, especially
Michael
with
Myers
Jason
never
X.
got silly.
Well, I don't know. Did you see the one where he fought Buster
okay,
Rhymes?
Okay, H2O. Never mind. Yeah. I forgot about H2O.
Well, that was after H2O. It got even worse after H2O, but whatever.
Anyway.
A lot of these characters go through that. I think Chucky handles it the least embarrassingly because he was something that never should have been taken that seriously to fucking begin with.
I disagree.
I think in one movie it worked. I think in the first film it worked. By the time the second movie came along, he was no longer even remotely fucking scary. Now look, as a kid, I saw a scene from the second Chucky movie and freaked out. So obviously it can work on that level when you're surrounded by dolls and you're a kid with an overactive imagination.
Right.
But to adults, it makes very little sense to be scared of fucking Chucky. I guess all these supernatural beings you could say that about. But whatever. He's a doll. He's a living, crazy doll with a foul mouth. He's kind of...
He's a serial
he fits,
killer
right,
trapped,
it, trapped
in
a doll. Which the premise already works as a comedy, I feel like. So this movie just says, fuck it. It's a comedy now. And it doesn't go crazy with it. It's still a horror movie. There's still some really gruesome fucking kills in this movie.
Yes.
There's still some people being chopped up by...
It wouldn't be a Chucky movie,
right.
though, if there weren't.
Right, and it doesn't back away from that. It maintains the horror of it. You still have the classic Chucky character and voice. It doesn't compromise him as a character. to get the laughs. I mean, it just presents it in a different context.
But in a slew of other Chucky films, isn't it kind of just another forgettable entry? I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just a very forgettable film. Like, I've seen this movie, but I couldn't fly from it. If you paid me $1 million, I couldn't tell you what the
film is. All right, I'll tell you tons of scenes. I haven't seen it in years, and I'll tell you tons of scenes.
Okay, well, because go ahead.
I can tell you when
I've seen it once, maybe with you, but I don't
know. A lot of it centers around a road trip. There's Chucky is committing all these murders on the road, and the couple who's taking Chucky across the country with them is pretty much none the wiser that it's happening. And so they're being framed for these murders, and the authorities are on their trail, and they're blissfully unaware of it as Chucky is just amassing a huge kill count across America. Finally, they're the gay best friend character, and they're a couple who is eloping together against the wishes of their parents and shit. Their gay friend finds some murder trophy somewhere, realizes that they're killed, that, well, he thinks that they're the killers. I remember him getting smashed by a fucking truck in a scene of just his body liquefying into total gore.
Those are always cool.
Sounds pretty cool.
Somebody gets so hard that they just turn to a bag of liquid.
Chucky's got some great lines in this. Jennifer Tilly, even if you don't like her, has got some great, like, oh, I'll give you a great Chucky line from the movie. Just before he dies, he says he's standing over a grave that he made someone dig, and they got him dead to rights with like a shotgun or some shit. And he's like, you know what? Fuck you. I'll be back. And Chucky decides, you know what? Fuck it. I don't want to be human again. I'm Chucky. I'm the murdering doll, and that's what I love being the fucking murdering doll. I'm as famous as this. Fuck you. Go ahead and kill me. I'll be back. I always come back. And then he kind of thinks about it for a second. He's like, oh, but dying is such a bitch. And then they blow his fucking chest open with a shotgun and cast him into the fucking grave. There's just so many great scenes in this movie like that. Now, like I said, I'm not arguing for this movie to be in the 90s. I think it's just a pretty decent movie that's a little underrated. I don't think it's some lost masterpiece that's not given its proper due as the genius film that it is. Out. I'm just saying it's
sounds
pretty.
Like a cop out.
I'm saying it's a pretty fucking good movie. It's a pretty decent entry into the fucking Child's Play franchise.
Paul, does that not sound to you like a cop out?
I mean, I've heard you out, TJ.
Yeah,
and here's my problem with that. I lament to a certain extent when these scary dudes go comic. Now there's one scary dude in particular that I think benefited from the introduction of a little bit of comedy, and that's Freddy.
Right.
But Freddy is on his own.
He was a little jokey from the beginning.
He was a little jokey from the beginning, but a little bit more. Most of people's most memorable moments about Freddy are when they allowed Robert Englund to just go full-blown. He's foul-mouthed, and he's jokey, and he's punny.
Oh, it's beautiful then.
That doesn't work for a lot of these, though. And I disagree with one fundamental thing, and you said it very, very fucking early, and I kept my mouth shut. Okay. You said that he's already not fundamentally scary. He's already fundamentally jokey. I don't think that's the case with Chucky. I think that the idea of a child's toy coming to life and being inhabited by a serial killer and stalking a family is inherently scary. And I think by this time, they had just run out of ways to do that creatively, and they decided to hire Jennifer Tilly and make another doll and interject a fucking bunch of comedy into the series instead of sticking to the fundamental point of trying to find ways of making Chucky scary.
Right. I think that's probably where people get divided on this film, because it's either you think the comedy angle works for Chucky, which I do, or you just think it doesn't work,
here's
which
the thing.
You don't.
I liked the comedy in Cult of Chucky. I thought that the reason I liked that is because I thought it found a pretty good marriage between this totally jokey action film Chucky.
Right.
And the scary Chucky of old. There was some genuinely disturbing scenes in there. There were actually some genuinely heart-wrenching
scenes. It's weird
scenes
because
in there.
For me, I like the scary Chucky. I like the funny Chucky. I don't really like the middle ground where they kind of tried to. It's a little bit in each camp. I don't know. I feel like this one.
So Paul likes the balance, but you like them to commit fully to.
I like
comedy
that Chucky's character is best embodied by that balance.
Make it a fucking comedy. Make it a fucking straight up horror movie.
Well, because Chucky is kind of absurd. Even if it is terrifying,
look,
it is kind of absurd.
Chucky is absurd.
If you watch the Child's Play movies as an adult now, if you're not someone who's easily scared,
you're probably
going to think it's funny. I'll tell you what, there's a scene in the original Child's Play that is genuinely scary even to this day to me. And it's the scene where the mother is trying to figure out if he's really alive or not.
Right.
And she's about to throw him in the fire. She's like, I'm going to throw you in the fucking fire if you don't show me some sign that you're actually alive. And the doll just goes absolutely batshit insane in her hands.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like subtle. It was just like from 0 to 100 like that. And it's fucking genuinely a terrifying moment.
The problem with Chucky, what you're really saying is that once the novelty factor wears off, there's really just not much substance there. And I think that's really what this movie suffers from is that. And I think that's Paul's getting at. Like Paul's like, when they balance those things out, then lack of substance doesn't hurt the movie as much. This is just a lack of substance.
I feel like they did some pretty great. Look, maybe going the comedy angle with Chucky is the wrong decision. But even as a wrong decision, I feel like they did a pretty goddamn good job of it in this movie. I remember it's not hilariously funny like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles or something. But you know, I remember having some good laughs at the fucking film, and also enjoying the gore element that's perpetually there and enjoying the Chucky performance that's always been good throughout every single iteration of the character ever portrayed by Brad Dourif. So I don't know. I really like the movie. I don't think it deserves to be a 46 or a 48.
Can we see some of the criticisms of the film?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they're all... I mean, it's just... It's the same criticisms you see of all the fucking...
But, I mean, we did it from all the other films. So
grizzly tongue-in-cheek sequel isn't for kids.
No shit. Well,
fuck, yeah, I mean, no
it's
shit.
Like, it's just shit like that. Every
Chucky movie.
Yeah, I mean, what do you want?
How about this? Feels more like a parody of these movies than an actual extension of the world established in part one.
Yeah, it kind of is. That's what I'm pretty sure that was the intent. Redundant and more than a little wearisome. I mean, I guess if that's how you want to approach it. I don't know.
I don't know that I would call it redundant or wearisome. I just don't like the...
Yeah, I mean, look, Paul's criticisms are better than any of these fucks' criticisms.
Yeah, so just kind
of... So fuck this. Anyway, it's time for... Speaking of Paul, it's time to get into his films.
Yeah.
Cool.
Get these middling picks out of the way.
Sure thing, Paul.
Let's talk about the real list. So Hannibal.
Yeah, the first
poor
pick,
Hannibal.
Yeah, let me just go ahead and quickly break down the IMDb scores and stuff, and then
give
I'll set you
us.
Loose. IMDb on Hannibal 6.8,
respectable
score. About the score you'd expect to see on a pretty decent movie,
right?
39% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a dismal score.
Yep.
57 on Metacritic, which is a middling score. Yeah, not great, but not hideous.
They're totally wrong. But
I based my picking of this movie not on what the critics have said. It doesn't surprise me to see the disparity in those scores and for me to think that they were all low. Because when I talk to people about this movie, I often find a person that just didn't like it. And almost all the time, they can't put their finger on why they didn't like it. And I've narrowed it down. It is a movie that is called Hannibal. You can see the poster of it here has a picture of the character Anthony Hopkins plays in this series of movies, Hannibal Lecter.
Even though it's simplistic, it's a great poster.
It's a great poster, but I think people feel cheated when they watch Hannibal because you know what? There's not a whole lot of Hannibal in Hannibal.
That is true.
Hannibal is a story about all these other crazy... flawed and fragmented characters from Hannibal's past victims of his that managed to escape, horribly, horribly disfigured. Different characters from the aftermath of Hannibal's horrible, horrible spree of killings. We do get to see Hannibal, but very little of him. The story is more focused on the investigation of Hannibal and his crimes and what he's left in his path, and that's why I love it.
We do get to see a lot of Hannibal, though. I mean, it's not like
you do. I'm not saying he's totally absent from the film.
It's not like he's, you know, barely in it. I mean, he's in it as much as you'd think as a titular character who's so dominant on the poster.
For this poster, and to go as far as to name it Hannibal.
Right.
You're selling it on Hannibal Lecter.
Clearly. I think that people felt cheated walking out of that audience.
I do feel as well that there was, I feel like the character was treated a little bit less seriously in this movie. Like, you know, Hannibal was always a witty, intelligent guy, but I feel like there was way more of a, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge thing going on between him and the audience in this movie than there ever was in Silence of the Lambs. Like, it kind of feels like he never directly breaks the fourth wall, but he says a lot of things that feel like it's for the benefit of a hypothetical audience out there somewhere.
Like you know, the scene where he gives the kid the brains and shit like that.
Yeah, I mean, making a speech to it. He was talking to Clarice at that time, at least. But, like, there's a lot of times where he does, like, little witty one-liners before killing people and shit, like or some shit.
He's that way.
It makes him a little bit more, like, into a slasher, whereas in the first movie, he felt like he was a little bit above just your garden variety slasher movie villain.
I still feel like you have that with this film,
Don't get to see Hannibal in his natural environment in the first film at all. We are introduced to an utterly subdued version of Hannibal Lecter, a man that has been reduced to a padded cell and paintings as long as he goes along with whatever he's told.
Yeah, well, I feel like, though, we do see the unrestrained Hannibal at the end of the movie during his big escape sequence. And
we get a glimpse.
I don't think that the Hannibal in this movie measures up to the Hannibal we saw at the end of Silence of the Lambs. I think that's a big part of the reason why it, like, Hannibal doesn't, the coolest thing that I remember him doing in the movie was, gutting that detective that was on his trail.
Right.
Yeah, he basically kills him. Hanging him in such a way that it also guts him at the same time.
Right, and that was the historical significance of that.
Yeah, and that being his ancestor and all that stuff.
Right.
That was really awesome, really brutal scene, but I don't think that it matches for me Hannibal bludgeoning those guards to death and then peacefully enjoying that record at the end.
That operatic music, and he's killing them.
Is why people felt cheated by this film. Because even though we do get to see quite a bit of Hannibal, we see him in an environment that we're unfamiliar with. And we don't like what Ridley Scott and the writers of this film do with Hannibal Lecter in the wild. I don't mind seeing that side of Hannibal Lecter.
Right.
I do happen to think he's portrayed better in the wild in Red Dragon in the earlier scenes than that, where he's dealing with...
Even though at that point you have to believe that Hannibal literally ages in reverse.
Right.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that's a different Hannibal too. This is a Hannibal that's escaped custody and is one of the most wanted men in the world. Not a comfortable...
He's really not sweating it too much though. He's working as a museum curator. And
he's a comfortable psychopath.
Yes, exactly.
He's manipulative. He knows how to get out of town and become something else.
He's obviously the character's super brilliant. I don't think the portrayal of Hannibal in this movie is at all bad. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I think that the Hannibal they get in this movie is just ever so slightly, like maybe 10% less than what you got in Silence of the Lambs. And I think people maybe feel that to some extent. Like, it just doesn't feel quite right. Or maybe for some people it's worse than that. I don't know.
But here's the thing, and you're always going to have this. When Silence of the Lambs... And Anthony Hopkins' portrayal of Hannibal Lecter, it's like, you have the novelty factor. You've never seen this trick before. And he's such a fucking memorable villain. I mean, he's not even the main villain of the film, but he's such a memorable character. And he's only on screen for like 15 minutes.
Right.
So with this, it feels like, I know what people were expecting. They were expecting to come into this is all about Hannibal.
Right.
That's it. And obviously, and it focuses way more
on all the fucked up people chasing him.
Starling. Right. You know, it's on a lot of other, there's all the little subplots.
Has another flaw here, this poster that we're looking at. Because it puts Anthony Hopkins, who I agree needs to be up there, and Julianne Moore. There should also be Gary Oldman on this. And in my opinion, TJ might not like this. Ray Liotta as well should be billed in this movie.
He's good in this.
Their performances are fucking absolutely amazing. In fact, directly, Gary Oldman's performance as Mason Verger, the weird, twisted, rich billionaire victim of Hannibal who had his face sliced off and was horribly eviscerated but managed to survive.
Didn't he even not take a credit for this movie?
I don't know.
I believe he didn't.
His performance in this movie is the most memorable thing about
it. Despite playing a main character and doing it very well.
He manages to play a victim in a way that...
Yeah, it makes you still despise him.
Right. Show you that not all victims are great people, and that at the end of the day, what a victim becomes is often a dark thing. Mason Verger is the best part of this movie, and it's the reason why I think it deserves a way better score than it does. His performance alone in this movie is worth watching it for. And that's pretty rare amongst movies for me, but for some reason, I just cannot forget that performance, that central performance.
Yeah.
Oh, it's unforgettable.
I mean, this is another...
When you first meet the character, too, that's a great scene. Like, and they turn the lights up so you can actually get a kind of good look at him and, like, his visage. And you're kind of just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I tried to play a little devil's advocate with it, but honestly, like, 39% is a fucking slap
in
the face.
It's abysmal, man.
I mean, that's a slap in the face of a movie that's
egregious.
Yeah, this movie deserves much better treatment than that.
I mean, if Ridley Scott directing the film, I believe.
Let's hear what they got to say, fucking
the visuals
of
the movie
critics.
Are great.
Let's see. I keep wanting to see Ebert here. Come on, Ebert. You were still alive when this came out, weren't you? You fuck.
And maybe he scrubbed that from history like so many of his other shit reviews.
Hannibal doesn't seem to be about anything but its own swank decadence. Hopkins, with his reedy voice and effete airs, is still quite delicious in the part that won him an Oscar. But 10 years later, Lecter has become more camp than terrifying.
Tell what you were getting at, TJ.
Yeah, I think that there was... I mean, yeah, it was a little campy.
I don't know.
I wouldn't go full on with this guy's sentiments.
I don't know if Lecter has been explored enough at this time and through the movies for the determination to really be made.
Well, the problem is that there's. I feel like he was.
I mean, he was pretty defined by his Academy Award winning performance in Silence of the Fucking Lambs. I mean, you can't say like, oh, he was some undeveloped
character. But under different conditions,
he won a fucking Oscar for that fucking movie.
Well, very little screen time. I'm not saying that the character maybe as a whole is underdeveloped. But I mean, like. That the nuances of the character. How do you know the character wouldn't say those
right,
things?
Right, yeah. Let me ask you this about this
I mean,
movie.
How can you say he's not tongue-in-cheek?
Because I think we've talked to death about that, but what do you think about Julianne Moore replacing Jodie Foster?
Had to be done, and I think that she was a good selection for the part, but Starling is an incredibly different character in this movie than she is.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt, too.
And it's kind of a bold move, because they could not, like, Jodie Foster couldn't get her or whatever. It just didn't work out.
She wouldn't do it.
She turned it down. And they had to, they had this movie that was based around this previously established relationship between Lecter and one of his investigators. And instead of trying to hire somebody and have them do a Clarice Starling impersonation, they upped their ante. And I guess maybe banking on the fact that some years had passed and that Starling had gotten more professional and more confident. Because what we get in Hannibal, in Julianne Moore's performance, is a far more confident, more capable, I think, more ready to step into the shoes of a lead investigator, Clarice Starling. And maybe a lot of people didn't like that as well. Maybe they wanted her to remain the kind of demure, assertive only when she absolutely has to be, understated performance that they got from the first film.
Right. I wonder if it had something to do with these low scores, though. Just like, hey, you know,
I know
not,
it did.
I'm not really sure about this new Clarice, because...
I feel cheated by the changes that they have had to make to keep this story going, and thus the movie is shit. That's what I feel most people feel about this movie.
Right.
At least the ones that
I mean,
you have to
admit that a bad cast... I'm not saying she's a bad casting choice. I'm saying that a bad casting choice for a particular character, especially an established one who's been played by someone else, can that can sink a ship.
I just
for sure.
don't think that's the case here.
Right.
Enough time has passed.
Do you think
between
that
these
there's
films.
Enough? You think there's enough there that opinion would be valid in your mind if
yeah,
someone else were to have it?
I mean, on a cursory watch of this film, I guess so. If you just came there hoping that, and I don't blame you if you came to this movie looking at the fucking promotional materials for it. I mean, it's just sold as, hey, a deeper, better look at Hannibal. And really, it's not. It's really not what people wanted. And I think that has caused a lot of people to just dismiss it out of hand. And on multiple watches of this film, I felt that way the first time I watched Hannibal.
Right.
But
I was actually pretty happy with it the first time I saw it.
I walked out of feeling slightly cheated by it. And because it's not as good a film as The Silence of the Lambs.
No, it's definitely not.
No.
No, definitely.
It doesn't rise to that. I think people felt cheated by that. But I think a lot of
for a fucking sequel to a Oscar-winning, multiple Oscar-winning film, I feel like it's pretty goddamn good.
I agree.
I mean, and so is Red Dragon. The whole little trilogy with Anthony Hopkins playing Hannibal Lecter is a fucking... it's solid.
Well, Red Dragon puts Hannibal Lecter back in his familiar place.
Yeah.
And I think that people receive Red Dragon way better than they receive this
film. A very
film.
Different relationship, though, between his character and Edward Norton's character than his and Clarice's.
Oh, yeah, because Edward Norton's character is a far more assertive. He's a veteran investigator rather than
not
a
only
brand
that,
new
but he's
Academy
also
he's more responsible.
He's more in Hannibal's head, too.
Right, he's more capable. Yeah, I really enjoy the trilogy, and I think this one is unfairly panned, especially by Rotten Tomatoes. Boo for the fucking 39% on this.
Yeah, terrible.
That's a brain-dead fucking rating for this. The IMDb score, it's on the high end, honestly. I mean, like, not, I don't think
so. It's
not
awful.
But it's not awful.
Yeah,
I would give this a 7.5, 8.
At 6.8, it's definitely got its defenders.
And
probably,
the Metacritic score, I think, is way too
middling. Seems like
I'd feel comfortable putting it around a 7.5 myself.
I think it's weighed down just by audience expectation. I think critically, they're just reflecting that in the audience, that they're coming to this film expecting to be about Hannibal Lecter, and when you don't deliver on that premise, you're just going to get a lot of unhappy people.
All right, we're going to get to Paul's next film, but first, I actually need, I forgot to do this at the time, to give you the averages for my list.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Because which was, once again, Friday the 13th, Part 7, Death to Smoochie and Bride of Chucky. So the average IMDb score of those films is 5.7. The average Rotten Tomatoes score is 39, and the average Metacritic score is 33.
Pretty low.
Scotty's, once again, where IMDb 7.1, Rotten Tomatoes 49%, and Metacritic 47. So, Paul, with that being in mind, we're going to go to your next film.
Let's get rid of all these horror movies.
This is a film called The Last Dragon, which the first film on this list to come up that I have not myself seen.
I have not seen this as well.
Wow.
So, Paul, you're going to be kind of, I don't know, I don't even know how to vamp on this, so we're just going to probably go through
fine.
It kind of quick.
What is The Last Dragon?
IMDb is 6.9. Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes is 59%, and Metacritic does not have any reviews of it.
Let me ask you a question, guys, then, since you've never seen this movie. You like kung fu movies?
Yep.
Yep.
Do you like slapstick comedies?
Not so much.
Yeah, sometimes.
Scotty, not so much. You sometimes, depending on.
Yeah,
do you like action films?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes and yes. Do you like blaxploitation cinema?
Somewhat.
No. Wink, wink. Yeah, I do, actually. I love it.
Yeah. This is a mishmash of all of those genres into one insanely over-the-top, reveling in its own stupidity and looking good while doing it. Stylish 80s kung fu disaster of a fucking film. And I love it. And I've loved it since I was a little kid.
How does it compare to something like Black Dynamite, if you've seen that?
It's not like that.
Okay.
The lead character in this film, in fact, is the opposite of Black Dynamite. He is a nerd. The guy you see in the center of the film is Leroy. He's the lead character in this movie, and he's basically a weeaboo. He is a black man raised in the inner city who has decided to adopt the mentality and training and lifestyle of a kung fu master under the tutelage of a kung fu teacher.
Cool.
And he talks with an Asian affectation, and he walks around the entire movie wearing that little Asian getup with the weird white buttons and the sandals and the hat, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a full-blown weeb. And he's a dork, and everybody makes fun of him. He's busted on by everybody in the community, obviously, because they're all dressing hip and walking around with boom boxes with hip-hop, and he's shuffling around in wooden block shoes, you know? So it's definitely an inversion of that. The villain in the film, though, is very blaxploitation. You can see him in the back holding up his hands menacingly.
Looks like a black Pai Mei kind of.
Yeah, his name is Shonuff in this.
Shonuff.
He has a great chant that he makes his gang do. He says, "Who's the baddest?" And they say, "Shonuff." "Who's the meanest?" "Shonuff." "Who's the lowest down scummy fuck in this town?" Or whatever. And they say, "Shonuff." And then he goes, "You damn right." So he's definitely
that's awesome.
The shaft of this
film.
All right,
so I already agree that this movie's underrated based on what you said. You've sold this movie to me.
There's a subplot in this movie that you can also see here displayed on the poster. The white guy in the background and the girl. There's a love subplot that involves Leroy falling in love with this girl who's, she's a TV personality in the local town that, and she runs like one of those like dance shows that were popular back in the 70s and 80s. You remember like Soul Train or whatever?
Yeah, something like that.
She's like the lead of one of the host of one of those. Leroy's in love with her. Shonuff is in love with her. And this white guy behind her is her horribly, like, corrupt, white, racist manager who's constantly trying to undermine her career to get his wife, who's devoid of any talent, looks, or ability, in her position. So it's great. It's, like I said, there's a lot of slapsticky comedy to it. The culmination of it is, before he's killed tragically early in the film, Leroy's kung fu master tells him about the glow, which is supposedly this ancient martial arts technique that you can tap into if you harness enough of your inner power. And the last battle in the film involved him having developed the power to have the glow, but then Shonuff reveals that he himself has tapped into the dark side of the glow, and he's got the red glow.
Damn.
So you get this badass kung fu fight with all these 80s laser effects on them. Everybody's exploding with color and shit. It's a badass movie. It's way underrated and underwatched and under-talked about because it's such a mishmash of genres, and that's why it's on this list.
So let's. Since obviously me and Scotty can't offer any resistance to you, let's see if we can find some critics who panned this. Now, a lot of critics did like it. So let's see. A.K.A. Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, and a sure sign that somewhere along the way, the man from Hitsville, USA, lost it badly.
Oh, look, a Roger Ebert.
Right, oh, well, here's your enemy. Oh, shit. Let's go. Let's read your enemy. 2.5. He didn't totally pan it.
No.
Blah, blah, blah. Well, let's just read his caption here, because I don't have time to go through that whole fucking thing. It's so entertaining that I could almost recommend it. If it weren't for an idiotic subplot about a gangster and his girlfriend, a diversion that brings the movie to a dead halt every 8 or 9 minutes.
Boo, so wrong. The subplot is fun. The whole movie is fun. Roger Ebert sucks.
I mean, it's always sound like people are too down on this film, though. Like even Roger Ebert's criticism.
Yeah, he's saying it's entertaining.
There's a caveat to it. It's like the main story is entertaining. The subplot sucks.
He just didn't care for the subplot.
So Michael Schultz tries hard, but can't quite manage to tie the varied elements of action, romance, comedy, and musical video together. Though as entertainment, this is engaging enough. See, so yeah, it looks like
even these people giving it negative reviews have got to begrudgingly paid like, a little respect. So.
I think sucks that they felt like a movie that entertained them deserved a negative review.
What purpose does a film, I mean, obviously movies can make you think and all that other shit, but ultimately the purpose of a movie is to entertain. So if a movie entertained you, how the fuck are you going to give it a negative review?
You don't got to give it a glowing, like, this is the finest thing ever, but at least have
acknowledge that it did its fucking job. Look, as a movie.
Felix is back. He says, say what you want about it, but I still love it. There you go, Paul.
Well, all right, Felix Vasquez, I agree with you on this one. There's probably a lot of nostalgia for this one. A lot of these people probably watched this movie when they were younger, like I did. I know I started watching it when I was before 10, seven, 8 years old.
It seems the thrust of the criticism of the film is just that there's so many disparate elements, it doesn't bring it all together. That's really, it seems like, the thing. But most people, I haven't really, from these ones, haven't really seen anyone say it's just outright shit.
Right.
It just doesn't deliver on the premise.
Yeah. I believe that it's definitely...
Oh, dude, listen to this fucking review, dude.
Okay.
It is crammed with kung fu, singing, rapping, dancing, and video art. And no moment goes by without at least three of those things transpiring simultaneously.
Janet Maslin sounds like a pretentious piece of shit.
What a fart.
That's so horrible. Oh, no. Different entertainment things happening to me all at once.
It just sounds
what a nightmare.
This was too boundary breaking for a lot of stuffy, whiny fucks, basically.
Yeah. There's some fucking songs in this movie. Like, it's an 80s movie, so there's some like 80s pop songs that are featured in music video form that probably haven't aged well. So if I had to give it a critique, it was that it relied too heavily on what the popular music sounded like at the time for it to be really, truly timeless in that way. But other than that, I couldn't recommend this movie highly enough. If you like any of those things I mentioned at the very beginning, kung fu, slapstick comedy, just normal, you know, kind of goofy comedy, action, you know, a little romance subplot thrown in there. If you like all those things or any of those things, it's worth looking at. Faux show. But I tell you what, TJ, there's only one man sitting here on the deep fat fried dais that had the balls to pick a really, truly shit film and put it on this list, TJ.
Yeah.
Everybody middled. Oh, you know,
well,
it's not
you weren't
great.
Supposed to put shit films. You're supposed to
TJ.
All right.
You're not letting me finish, TJ. This is mom and Dad Save the World, an epic adventure from the 90s. Give them the scores, TJ.
IMDb, 5.3.
Boo.
Which is tied for the lowest movie score here with my pick of Friday the 13th,
yes.
Part 7. However, your movie underperforms Friday the 13th, Part 7, which has a Rotten Tomato of 29%. This movie only has 9%.
This is the rottenest movie on the list.
And once again, you picked a movie with no Metacritic score. So only one of your movies had a Metacritic score.
Boldly going where no parents have gone before.
This film is shit. It is absurd from start to finish. Crammed with jokes that don't make sense. Filled to the brim with silly, over-the-top performances and really kind of goofy practical effects. It takes place on a tiny planet ruled by a tiny dictator. John Lovitz is given more screen time than any character in this film. John Lovitz! And I still put it on this list, TJ. You know why?
Why?
Because it revels in being those things. This movie knew it was shit from the get-go. And they decided to be the most shit that they could be. And they succeeded, and it's great. It's great entertainment from start to finish. I giggle my ass off thinking about this movie. There are heart-wrenching moments in this movie that make me sad. You remember when he's being tortured and he keeps begging for his wife? He's, Marge! Oh, Marge! TJ, a tear formed in my eye.
It did not.
And yours,
you know,
as well.
No, it did not. You know what this is?
This is Paul trolling this list.
No.
No, it's not.
No.
Yes. No, it's not.
I will not be called a troll.
No, I don't actually believe Paul's trolling. You know what I believe it is?
What?
Paul fucking saw this shit as a kid.
Yes.
And this is a big fucking nostalgia bummer, because when he was a kid and he had no sense, he liked this and was like, this is a good movie. Like a little Paul, like six years old, crying like, oh my God, it's a wonderful movie. Then he grows up and every once in a while, like, Paul will just be sitting around just thinking about a movie. He's like, Mom and Dad saved the world. Yeah, it's not. Dude, and Paul's a lover of schlock. So you have to take Paul
at that. I am that.
He is someone that just like schlock informed him in his life. He's one of those people, he saw a bad movie. Instead of everyone going, that sucks, Paul's a contrarian to the core and is like, you know what? I don't think that movie sucks. Here's why it's actually good.
Mom and Dad Save the World, which was directed by Greg Beeman. And has
Greg Seaman,
and has the scraggly feel of an extended Saturday Night Live skit, boasts unusually inspired production design.
Boo! Fuck him! The production design on this movie is great.
Well, that's what he said. Unusually inspired production design. He's saying it's good,
oh, okay,
despite
good.
The fact that the movie feels like a
boo,
terrible.
Boo! Damn, Paul.
Okay, Saturday sorry. Night. I just thought it was all negative. See another one where they got to
simmer down, Paul. Simmer down.
Mom and Dad Save the World is an insult to the idea of children's
damn,
entertainment.
Damn, shots fired.
It's not even children's entertainment.
I mean, it was targeted towards
kids. It's dirty. It's got dirty jokes and shit all woven throughout
it. Oh, Paul, you're really going to hate this one.
Here's a novel idea, a kid's movie with the parents as heroes. That twist is the most, some might say only, refreshing element in Mom and Dad Save the World. Yet another overwrought but uninspired fantasy in which all the wit is in the amusing stylized sets and costumes rather than the script.
Wow. Yet another dour piece of shit.
All right, here's one
movie
critic. Here's one I definitely agree with, because I felt this when we were watching it. It's not too much more interesting than a blank screen.
Oh, shut up. Fuck you. You know what, TJ?
Drop the fucking mic,
listen,
dude.
You know what? Paul, I remember this. I remember a sequence of fucking events that Paul is omitting from fucking record here.
Okay, TJ.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Let's hear this sequence.
We were sitting around, and Paul's like, you know what's a good underrated movie? Mm-hmm. Mom and Dad Saved the World.
You're remembering another movie.
No.
Yes.
No.
You're remembering Stay Tuned.
We did it with that, too. We did it with both of these fucking movies. But you know what? With Stay Tuned, it was actually the same, because it was both times we both had fond memories of the fucking movie. We watched Stay Tuned, we realized, hey, Stay Tuned fucking sucks.
It was garbage, yeah.
And it's a piece of shit.
I agree.
We watched this one.
No, I don't agree. Stay Tuned has some interesting ideas.
It does.
And it was dated by its referential humor.
That's fine. You know what? Both these movies, I will grant, have interesting premises.
Yes.
But you know what? Both these movies have shit execution. Neither of them is funny. Both of them feature that weird fucking child molesting Jeffrey Jones or whatever the fuck his name is.
Come here, boy.
I like Jeffrey Jones despite who he may have diddled, okay?
Yeah, yeah, well, whatever.
Hey, diddle.
He's a funny actor, but whatever. I'm just throwing shade at this point.
I'm not a Me Too guy.
I'm going to play with Paul's little fiddle.
He's going to fiddle Paul's little balls.
He's effective as a big old schlub in this movie.
Fine, yeah, he does a good job. And he's good as the little servant of the devil in the other movie, too.
And as the demon in Howard the Duck.
Both those movies are boring as shit. And this movie's boring, and you admitted it was boring at the time, and now a little more time has passed, and you've repressed the memory of any of that to the point where you're like, you're thinking of something else. And now you're right back to calling it underrated.
No.
When you already were proven fucking wrong.
You might be correct all the way up until that last part.
Yeah, that's a departure from the truth.
That
right
last
there.
Part where you are projecting your review of this film onto me, TJ.
Dude.
I thought that this film was visually interesting all the way through, entertaining and fun. And you know what? I had the balls to put a family film on this list. But
you did.
There's a subversive thing about this movie that all you right. didn't catch, TJ.
What is that?
You didn't catch. This is an incisive critique of the fact that the people that run our society have all become idiots. They are transported to the little planet of Spango, named after the Emperor, Todd Spango, who, if you watch this movie, if you don't listen to these naysayers, and you watch this movie, you will see Donald J. Trump written all over Todd Spango's face. This movie predated Trump's candidacy. This movie called the Trump presidency years, decades before it happened. Todd Spango will be remembered as an early
Hail
warning.
A very desperate attempt to tie
an
this
early
to Donald
warning
Trump.
Warning for Americans not to allow stupidity, not to allow ignorance and self-servingness and narcissism to the top of their fucking government. Like
what
Todd Spango
what a
and the
lofty
planet
and
Spango.
Prescient film.
I had no idea how
what
powerful
a lofty,
this film
prescient
was.
Fucking film.
All right, so
how
look,
absurd, how ridiculous. That's definitely not what they were going
I
for.
I guess I can go ahead and actually just show you guys this now because there's no mystery anymore to it.
Demystify, TJ.
Let's demystify.
I'll tell you one thing. If
bitch.
Paul recommends a movie, you have to know. Unless you
so check this
unless
out.
You actually know what the movie is, it's probably
final
fun.
Scores for yeah. Paul. IMDb average 6.3.
Okay.
Average Rotten Tomato 36%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the IMDb people know what they're talking
his
about.
His Metacritic doesn't really matter. It's 57, but only because the only movie that
yeah,
he has.
Yeah, I dispute that totally.
Yeah, so that's really not useful data. So the lowest of the low when it comes to IMDb scores is me. The lowest of the low when it comes to Rotten Tomato scores is Paul. The lowest of the low when it comes to Metacritic scores is me,
that's
but
odd.
Only because I can't compete with Paul because his films don't have, there's not enough data.
At least you admit it.
Shut up, Paul. I meant, you know what I meant.
I know exactly
you know
what
exactly,
you meant.
Yeah, you don't know what I meant. Yeah, never mind. Anyway, so yeah, that's how it breaks down. And look, as far as I'm concerned, every movie here is probably worth at least one watch to decide how the fuck you feel about it. These are divisive movies, obviously. They're love them or hate them movies. In some cases, we might be the only ones who fucking like them. I think in the case of Mom and Dad Save the World and maybe Friday the 13th Part 7, me and Paul might be the only sole defenders of these fucking movies.
I don't think that's true.
But, well, obviously, a bit of exaggeration there. Anyway, thank you guys for watching. And remember, we're going to do a little special Super Bowl thing for patrons. We're going to watch all the stupid Super Bowl commercials and give you our thoughts because
hooray,
for some
hooray.
Reason that's going to happen. For some reason, you guys like it. Honestly, that's my least favorite episode we've ever done.
The people disagree, dude.
The people want more.
Apparently, the people don't feel the same
give
as I do.
Give the people
they
want what
more.
They want, TJ.
We're giving it to the patrons. If you're not a patron, sign up for Patreon. You know
become
where the
patron.
Fuck it is.
See you later.
See you later, bitch.